Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Damage Counter Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things Pokemon trading card game. You got Phelan over here.
And you got Josh over here.
And we are here bringing you episode 43 of the podcast. Got a great show lined up for you, as always. Got Shaymin EX, probably one of the most legendary support Pokemon ever printed, is our card of the day. Of course, all the latest news, a lot of fun stuff to talk about there. We'll get into it. Going to be taking a step back to the Alola region in our 60-card showcase when we talk about Blacephalon GX. A little bit of retro action for you today. And then finally, we'll be topping things off with our top five cards from the brand new Pokemon 151 expansion. But, of course, as always, before we get into all that, Josh, my man, how you been doing?
I've been doing pretty good. Been getting pretty busy at work. I think you spoke about this a little bit on the podcast a while ago, how you were doubling down, focusing on work and all that. I've kind of come to the same conclusion myself, so I've been volunteering to help out more at work, doing a few things. It's made me way busier, slightly sadder, but slightly more fulfilled at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, just all the usual stuff that comes with like trying to focus on your career.
Yeah, I mean, you can see like strides being made, and you feel the accomplishments there. It does feel good, but man, does it get tired sometimes?
Oh yeah, no, yeah, you gotta embrace the suck a little bit, but it ends up being worth it.
Definitely. But I mean, besides that, I mean, it's just been a plethora of video games lately. All the last couple months, I've been buried in it between. I mean, Baldur's Gate, Starfield, Pokemon DLC came out. It's just, there's so many single-player games to play. I've been playing back and forth a whole bunch of games lately. I've been really enjoying the Pokemon DLC in particular, to keep it podcast-themed. Little short. I think both you and I have the same opinion on that. Definitely felt a little too short. But all around, I really enjoyed the DLC. I've been having a lot of fun with it. It's kind of renewed my interest in actually playing Pokemon again.
Yeah, I feel that for sure. And I mean, like, I've been a little out of the gaming space for the past, like, year or so. But, like, even I could, you know, even I not, like, keeping up with things as much as I used to. I was just like, this year has just been, like, insane for video games. Like, it's crazy, and it's making me feel like, man, I picked a bad year to, like, slink back from this.
Definitely has. And, I do want to say, too, just card game-wise, you sent me a video of a Digimon match today, and, man, my interest has never been more piqued in learning to play Digimon, and I understood about a third of what I watched in that video. Like, I think I got a grasp on it. I'm planning on watching an actual rule video a little later on here, because my interest has definitely peaked in Digimon now. That, it was a lot of fun of what I watched. I'm going to be honest; it looked really cool.
Yeah. So, this is something that I like would have mentioned on the podcast last week, but you know, since it was like a solo cast, I just like kind of skip over how I've been doing. I just get like straight into the episode when we do that. But yeah, so I found out that my favorite Digimon, Grace Novamon, is finally getting its own card. It's already out in Japan, but we won't get it until January here in the States. And I told myself back when Digimon came out in 2020, I said, okay, well, once they print my favorite Digimon as a card, I will play the game. Now it's finally happening. So I started looking into some stuff. I started learning the game and I was like, wait, this is kind of cool. Actually, I've been like, I haven't played it. I don't have any cards. I don't have any decks. I haven't loaded it up on Tabletop Simulator. I've just been watching a lot of stuff. I was like, man, this is kind of cool. And yeah, I saw a video today. Man, I wish I had the guys that the video pulled up in front of me now so I could shout out the channel. But here, let me grab that real quick. But essentially, it was a game featuring some cards that we'll be getting from Japan like later, including the Grace Novamon. And it was a battle played on Tabletop Simulator that... I mean, the production value was just crazy.
It was an amazing video.
Like, I was not expecting the production value to go that hard for a tabletop simulator game. And like, tangent, I'm not gonna linger on this for too long, but I am very much of the opinion that like the Pokemon TCG content space is like very lacking and stuff like this. It's just like and I mean this is a conversation that's been had on PTCG Twitter lately here, so I'm not like breaking open a can of worms necessarily, but like Pokemon TCG content is just like I'm gonna talk about this deck and then I'm gonna play like three games on PTCG Live and then like that's it, that's the video. And like that's fine, that's good, that's sufficient. But like, dude, like the Yu-Gi-Oh content creators, apparently the Digimon content creators, and I would probably assume that I don't really watch a lot of Magic videos, but I'm just going to go ahead and assume that they also are just absolutely one-upping us in terms of production value. I know, like, you know, Celio's Network, Burt's PTCG, Tricky Jim—they've been like upping their game lately for sure, and I think they're like the top dogs of PTCG content right now, but. Yeah, I just feel like this is kind of the stuff we need more of in the PTCG space. Anyway, amazing production value. This comes from the channel Rush Tomorrow. So, I mean, I guess if you're interested in Digimon and you know, are not aware of that channel, maybe go check them out because the production value was great. But yeah, we've been exploring it. So we're, you know, at the very least in January, we'll probably have more Digimon related stories. Because
Definitely.
we've been getting into it.
I mean, I'm always interested in learning a new card game, and I mean, obviously this is a Pokemon podcast, so it might not come up a lot, but I've always been a huge Digimon fan also. I was never one of those kids that picked a side. You know what I mean? It's, I, yeah, they're both sick. So definitely look forward to that.
Yeah, I was definitely a little bit more like casual Digimon. Like, I didn't get into it until like years after Pokemon had already like usurped my life, but I don't know. All I did was like play like one of the RPGs, and I was like, "Wait, this game is actually sick!" And it just, you know, I just fell in love. So,
Speaking of, and this will be the last we talk about Digimon, we'll wrap it up. But I recently have come into possession of a copy of Digimon Dusk, and I am so
nice.
hyped to play that game again, dude. I'm pretty excited. I'm holding off for now. I want to knock a few other things that I've already started off my list. Like, I still want to finish Mystery Dungeon, and I want to like clean up on my I started a Star Wars Jedi playthrough too, Jedi Survivor. A little off topic, but I want to like clean that up, clean up a couple games that I've started, and then I'm gonna start a playthrough of that game. But I'm super excited. Those games are amazing.
I think I got that game. I think I like bought it for my birthday a couple years ago, and I've been looking for the opportunity to bust it open again. And I don't know, that might happen soon, but.
I mean, anyway, to move on here, what have you been up to, man?
All kinds of things. League cups aplenty and challenges. Deck building, deck testing for Peoria. I'm actually feeling very confident about Peoria this weekend. I've crafted a homebrew. It's been a while since I've done that.
Nice.
But, you know, I took it to a League Cup. I got my first League Cup top eight with it. So pretty excited. I don't think there's, dude, it's a Sylveon deck, all right? I'm not gonna hide it. I've already hyped it up on, I think, like the last episode, actually. So yeah, I'm playing Sylveon. It's been like going really well, actually. So pretty excited about that. And I mean, even if I don't do well at Peoria, it's like whatever. I get to play my favorite deck. I'm not really going for the world's invite. It's just one of those things that if it happens, it happens. So that'll be all good. But yeah, I've had some pretty good showings at League Cups and League Challenges with it lately. So pretty excited for Peoria this weekend. But on a more professional side of things, you know, we were talking about that earlier. I have reached my milestone here. So to provide a little context in the IT world, because I work in the IT industry, there's like these certifications. You know, you pay X amount of money for a test, you take the test, you get certified in this specific technology, and that looks really good on a resume, right? And open some doors and all that kind of fun stuff. So I took one of those certifications, the Network Plus specifically. Managed to get the passing grade on it, so we're Network Plus certified. So that is 2 months of hard work and a lot of money spent thankfully not wasted. And now that that's all done and over with, I can commit more time to like content and going to more cups and challenges and stuff like that. And that's part of why like YouTube videos on the YouTube channel have just kind of like died. It's just because I've had to hunker down and focus on that. But now that that's out of the way, I can kind of get back to that a little bit more. Already got something in the works. I had some friends from the local community be like, hey, you know, we'd love to get in on some of those tabletop videos too. It looks like fun. So I got a gym leader challenge game recorded with somebody from my local community. That one, I'm going to say it's going to come a little bit later down the pipeline because I just talked about how I think PTCG content is lacking in terms of like production value. So I want to, you know, I'm not going to go say that and then just post a video, you know? So, I want to put some effort into it. So expect that hopefully in like a week or two, but, on the other side of things, I'm also looking to, start live streaming a bunch of Pokemon games. You know, I talked about the Ribbon Master Challenge a few times in the past. I haven't really started it just because I've been, you know, focusing on like PTCG and all this stuff.
Yeah.
They announced earlier today that, you know, the Wii U and the 3DS online services are going to be shutting down. And while according to Pokemon, Pokemon Bank is going to continue past the shutdown of Nintendo Network, probably not for very long. So I've got about a year to get all the ribbons from Gen 3 to Gen 7 before I lose a bank transfer. So I need to get cracking on that. So, if I go live before Peoria, you'll know. If not, look for me after Peoria, because I'm going to have to blitz through that whole thing. So that'll be fun. Be on the lookout for that. That's going to be on my personal Twitch page, twitch.tv/emerald_element. So if that interests you, you can find me there. But I think that's going to do it for us. Why don't we go ahead and get things started, the ball rolling with our card of the day. And oh boy, we got a doozy. Let's check it out. All right, Josh. So this card of the day came about honestly, the same way that all of them have been coming about lately. you know, we met up here to record, and you're like, all right, are we ready? I was like, nope, I still need to select a card for the segment. But you, my friend, came to the rescue with a brilliant suggestion, and honestly, one I'm surprised we haven't talked about yet, considering just how important this card was back when it first came out. And even for a long time afterwards in the expanded format, we have Shaymin EX, a basic,
classic.
The absolute classic, a basic 110 HP colorless Pokemon with the incredible ability Setup. When you play this Pokemon from your hand onto your bench, you may draw cards until you have 6 cards in your hand. Note, that is not limited once per turn. You can play multiple Shaymin and get that effect multiple times. And you have the attack Sky Return for 2 colorless energy, 30 damage. You return this Pokemon and all cards attached to it into your hand. Pretty broken card. Like,
definitely. It's, I mean, we know these days we have newer versions of this card or similar versions kind of that do the same thing with the Pokemon drop draws. So I think everyone knows how powerful that is. And Setup was just one of those powerful versions for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of interesting, and like part of it is definitely like the format that Shaymin was in, and we'll kind of break that down in a bit. But I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's the reason why Dedenne GX's Dedenne change ability, discard your hand and draw 6. You know, you're only limited to that once per turn. You can't use multiple Dedenne changes. That's why Crobat V's Dark Asset ability was limited to 1 Dark Asset per turn. And I mean, Crobat V saw a ton of play. That card was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Helped a lot of decks get into the game, even with just the singular proc of it a turn, right? And
definitely. I mean, just the power to be able to draw in Pokemon without having to use your supporter to do it is just insanely powerful. You know, anything that can make you draw without having to use the supporter is usually a good option for the most part. But just, I mean, like Setup or Crobat, like we were talking about, they're just those cards are so good. You draw so many cards. It's so easy to thin yourself down to one card in most scenarios and be able to drop like the Shaman EX or something like that and just completely refill your hand and keep on blasting.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, if you read an ability and when you read that ability, you say, that could be an okay supporter card. It's like, that's a good, okay, you have a good card in your hand right now. Because, I mean, there are literally supporters that are draw till you have six in hand, right? Bianca from Black and White. I guess Lily to a point from Sun and Moon. A little different, but basically the same thing. Karina's Focus from the Sword and Shield era. All of them have a draw till you have six effect, which have been marginally good, you know, throughout the years, sometimes better than others, but it is what it is. And you have that as an ability that you can proc multiple times. I mean, it's just absurd. And, you know, that's not even getting into the format or the card pool surrounding Shaman at the time of release, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you had to think, we had Ultra Ball in the format, right? Ultra Ball, discard 2, search your deck for any Pokemon. So you had very easy access to Shaman while also thinning your hand down to draw more cards with it. You had access to Versus Seeker so that you could just, like, for example, if you played Ultra Ball, you can just dump a supporter to grab your Shaman, and then, you know, you draw till you have six, and if you needed to dig some more, you could Versus Seeker the supporter that you dumped back, draw some more cards, right? I mean, Shaman just allowed for, like, the most insane amount of turbo I think probably the game has ever seen.
Definitely. It was insanely good. I mean, there were even shenanigans you could get up to using Sky Return and just resetting your Shaman and using it again. It just, I mean, it was insane.
Yeah, I mean, that was just another great thing about the card, right? You had a good poke attack, right? If you needed to finish something off or to set something up, Sky Return was great for that. And like you said, it gave you the ability to reuse Shaman. And, I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because there are multiple ways to do that, right? Super Scoop Up was in the format. Flip a coin if heads, pick up a Pokemon and all cards attached to it in your hand. You had AZ as a supporter card. You may pick up a Pokemon and add it to your hand, discard all cards attached, right? So you had multiple ways to reuse the same Shaman as well, which is kind of funny whenever you think about it. But
yeah,
I think like the absolute pinnacle, I think, of Shaman EX, though, I mean, come on, expanded format, come on, in a format where you have Shaman EX, Dedenne GX, Tapu Lele GX, Crobat V, Scoop Up Cyclone, the A spec from Black and White, which is basically a Scoop Up Net, and then you had Scoop Up Net that you could use on Shaman EX.
Yeah,
it was insane.
In any of those expanded formats, I mean, Shaman EX is pretty much a staple. Like, there's just no reason not to run it. It's so good.
Yeah, absolutely. So good. Like, the combination of Shaman EX and Scoop Up Net was so good that Pokemon stepped in and was like, yeah, Shaman's banned and expanded now. They're like, that's crazy. You can't do that. That's crazy.
Definitely. I think in one of our videos, in our X and Y video, we use Shaman, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if you need to see how broken it is, go watch that video. It's just really good.
I'm pretty sure there are multiple times in that video where Shaman bails either of us out.
Definitely.
I feel like it happens at least once every game with this card, I swear.
Oh, definitely. If you're ever on the edge and you draw Shaman, you're just like, oh my god, I have a chance. It's like that spark of hope.
Well, and I mean, that's another good thing about it too, right? Is that, especially like back when it came out, right? Like if you didn't have like a turn one supporter, you were kind of like sucking, but you know, then you got Shaman EX. It's like, okay, well, I don't have turn one supporter, but I have Ultra Ball, so I can find Shaman. Shaman's going to give me a second lease on life here. You know, you find your supporter and then you're in the game and, or, you know, whatever it is you're missing. I mean, yeah, dude, super cool card. Perhaps a little too powerful of an ability,
yeah.
considering the cards we have, but still, an all-time classic.
I think Crobat's the most balanced variant.
I agree, yeah.
Just, I mean, Dedenne, I think Dedenne is a little too good, too, honestly. Like, granted, you lose cards with Dedenne, but the full hand reset is a very powerful option in of itself, so.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we saw that in, like, the tag team era of Standard. Just like Dedenne was just like absurd, right? But I mean, yeah, Shaymin is one of the cards of all time.
Definitely. It's a classic. It's one. It's something like you were talking about, how just sometimes we got to come up with a card on the fly. I do usually keep a small poll in my head. Sometimes I have to think for a minute, but
yeah.
Of just like, I mean, there's a Pokemon's been around for a long time. There's a lot of very impactful cards to the game that are just so interesting to talk about. And oh, like yeah. You said, Shaymin is just by far one of the top, like, most game impacting cards that I think Pokemon really has had come out.
Yeah, 100%. You know, you say all these impactful cards, man, we haven't even scratched the surface.
No.
There's definitely a lot, but I think before we wrap up this segment of the podcast, I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention the alternate art promo that came out in, I forget the product, but it was this giant box, this giant celebratory box of like celebrating X and Y, came with a bunch of alternate art Pokemon, came with a bunch of full art supporter cards that are exclusive to that box, by the way. I don't remember what that box necessarily retailed for, but like, and it was kind of funny because this would never happen today.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, this was like that luxury box. I don't, like I said, I don't remember how much it cost. I want to say like $300, but I feel like that's wrong. That it's probably closer to like $100, $150. But anyway, it retailed for a bunch of money. But, you know, back then, the game wasn't like, you know, we didn't have the whole Logan Paul thing happen. We didn't have the bubble happen. So like, you know, it was a luxury product and it was cool, but a lot of people were just like, why would I buy that? It's full of rotated cards or cards that are about to rotate and stuff like that. So sat on clearance for a long time. I remember seeing it for $50 and wanting to buy one and be like, well, I don't play the game anymore, so why would I buy that? Boy, do I regret it. Point is, it comes with this beautiful alternate art Shaymin EX. You got the Mega Rayquaza in the background, this beautiful golden border. And I mean, this artwork.
It's gorgeous. There's always, you know, really good. I know we gush about just about every Pokemon artwork we talk about here on the podcast, but this is definitely up there in like the top five, in my opinion, of some of the best Pokemon artworks there is. It's up there with the Rose Reshiram, like, for me. It definitely is.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And I also just like love the reference of it, just because, like, you know, Shaymin EX and like Mega Rayquaza EX was like, you know, that was like the combination they were trying to sell you on in Roaring Skies.
Definitely.
Back in the day, because the Mega Rayquaza deck just did more damage based on like how many bench Pokemon you had and stuff like that. And of course, Shaymin is perfect for filling out numbers like that. It's just, oh, it's so good. Gotta love it, gotta love it. Well, that's gonna do it for our card of the day. Shaymin EX, one of the most impactful cards ever of all time. Let us know what you think. Hit us up on Twitter at DamageCounter, DamageCounterPodcast@gmail.com. If you prefer email, let us know what you think of Shaymin EX. Do you love it? Do you hate it? I know there's a few people that are not happy with this card. You know, let us know your full thoughts. You can hit us up, again, Twitter, email, or on our community Discord as well. We'd love to keep the conversation going with y'all in there.
Yeah, and as always, if you have a card you'd like for us to talk about here on the podcast, feel free to send it our way. We'd love to talk about it. Like I always say, we don't care what kind of card it is, as long as it's an official Pokemon card. We'd love to talk about it. It's honestly, I think in the long run, after been doing this officially for over a year now, I think Card of the Day probably is is my favorite segment. I mean, our main discussions are always up there for me, just because of the discussions themselves. You know, we love, me and Phelan love discussions. That's been a thing our entire friendship. And the 60 card showcase is always like fun to talk about a deck or something like that. But Card of the Day, I don't know, there's something a little more special about Card of the Day.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, with a segment like this, we can kind of like focus on the cards that don't get talked about. I mean, like, obviously we can talk about the impact of like, oh, this deck was really good, or this support Pokemon was insane. But you know, it also opens the doors for us to talk about, like, hey, here's this bulk card that just looks really pretty, or here's this card that just means a lot to me sentimentally, or here's this staple card that everybody glosses over because it's a staple. Every deck plays it, everybody knows what it does, type deal, you know? I mean, what other podcast is going to talk about Quickball for like 20 minutes? Probably no other podcast. That's a damage counter specialty right there.
It really is. Oh,
Well,
listen, man.
that'll wrap it up for our card of the day. Like I said, let us know what you think. But in the meantime, it's time we talk about some news, some regional tournaments happening, and some interesting news stories coming about. So let's talk about it. All right, time for some news, and some news we have for you indeed. Not a ton of news stories, but a lot of really big ones. And I'll say, I think all of these have a lot of people talking, for better or for worse. So let's just go ahead and jump right into it. The first of which, this was kind of something that broke out, like, basically right as the last episode got posted. So haven't had any time to talk about it until now, but the Pokemon Trading Card Game Classic, the price point on the product was finally revealed. It went up for pre-order at multiple retailers, including the Pokemon Center. And this got a lot of people talking, unfortunately, in a bad way, as the price point was revealed to be $400, which is massive, right? In Japan, this is going for about 3,500 yen. Which equates to roughly $240 here in the United States. So I have no idea why the product over here is like nearly doubled in price. And I gotta be honest, man. I mean, you know, you and I were both very excited for this product. It's something we were very much looking forward to, but $400?
Yeah, that makes this a lot harder. To make the decision to get a hold of. That's a little crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just so funny. Like, I had like a bit of whiplash when this was announced because I was like so excited. I was like, yes, it's finally coming out. I want to get it. This is going to be so much fun. And then I got to the Pokemon Center page. I was like, ooh, $400. I was like, no, I can't. I just can't justify spending that much money on this.
No, not for something for what it is. It's basically a collection piece that's fun to bust out occasionally and play. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
because a lot of the cards, like, you can't use in standard format, right? Like the reprints, even the brand new EXs, they're not allowed in standard format. And you know, it's nice that like the whole thing is like this game board, and it's got like, you know, the magnetic coned damage counters and the nice leather deck boxes and all that fun stuff. And like, that's all nice, but like, I don't th like ah, it's just hard. It's just hard to look at all of that and be like, I mean, yeah, it's luxurious. Yeah, it's a little bit higher quality than like a lot of the prepackaged stuff that we get, but like, I don't think we make it to $400 with this. I just don't think we do.
No, I mean 250, two like that'd be slightly pushing it still for myself, but I would still be kind of willing to pay that for all of what you get with this. But I don't know, 400. I just can't figure out how to justify it personally.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And you know, when the conversion rate was kind of announced, like once they, because obviously we got the price point for this in Japan way before really anything about this in the United States, but you know, the price point came out in Japan and they're like, hey, about $240, $250. I was like, you know what? That I would pay that personally. I still would. I think that's a fine asking price. I'm with you that it is like a little bit closer to that pushing it kind of side of things. And I don't know. I guess there's an argument to be made for like people getting their expectations to a point where we were expecting $240, $250. I personally would not. I don't think that's a strong argument, but you could make that argument. But I
I don't
think
know.
really what comes down to is that like, this is not a real format, right? This is its own self-contained thing. There's probably not going to be any expansions for it. So if you really wanted to play these decks and experience this, we know all the cards. We can just like print out real proxies, right? You know, I don't need to spend $400 on a luxurious, box play mat thing, and you know what I mean? It's just it's hard.
It's I don't know. It's very hard to just like retail justify $400 for something in a TCG game that's not standard, like in any kind of like way, honestly. Unless you're just flat out buying a booster box,
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's still cool, and I hope I get to see this product in person, just because I would like to actually get to look at it, because it is cool. Like you said, the whole like case and the way it's stored, and obviously the decks themselves, it's pretty cool. I just my plans of getting it are probably dashed. Oh well.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But hey, I mean, if anybody at Pokemon Company's listening, you want us to give us, send us over one of these, we can do a little bit of a showcase on it on the YouTube channel. We'd be happy to oblige. You can hit us up. You can check out our email. It's all there. So, anyway, yeah. So, is what it is. There. And the other thing, I was like, part of me wants to think that like this gets a price drop in the future because so many people are just like $400. Nah, not for me. But I mean, it's sold out in minutes, right? I would assume probably has to be scalpers, right? There's eBay listings for it and everything. Something tells me they're not getting their return on investment. I'm just saying, but. So I don't know. Part of me wants to believe that like hopefully this gets a price cut later on. You could probably find it in the store for 200, maybe even $100. We've definitely seen higher end products fall to that before. Like the Charizard Ultra Premium Collection. It's like a $120 box, and it's been almost a whole year, and you can still find those things in stores a lot of times marked down, even at stores that very rarely do stuff like that, like Target, right? So
Yeah.
it's possible that that might happen here, but we'll have to wait and see on that. Now, speaking of scalpers, I got a much more unfortunate story up next. So recently, and I think we did report on this a little bit an episode or two ago, Pokemon announced that they were going to be doing this collaboration with the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam. And they created a bunch of Pokemon product based off of the famous classical Van Gogh paintings. Things like canvases, pins, play mats, deck boxes, wall art, all that kind of fun stuff. And part of this promotion also was that if you bought some of this stuff, you also got a promo card, the Pikachu in a gray felt hat promo card. Obviously not playable. I mean, it would be really funny if it was, but it's just a cute little thing to go alongside it. And when when the exhibit opened at the museum, because they also had some of the artwork up like in the museum itself, there were not as many people browsing the artwork as I think Pokemon or the Van Gogh Museum of Amsterdam had hoped. But instead, a large swath of people swarming the store, the souvenir store at the museum. And I mean, there's th this video circulated all over Twitter. There's a good chance that everybody listening has seen it. But if you haven't seen it, I'll leave a link to the PokeBeach article in the episode description. You can see it for yourself there. There's a video that went viral, people tripping over themselves, like trying to climb over other people, trying to grab everything they can, just trying to get as much of the product as possible. And the easy thing to say here is that it's all scalpers, and there's a very real chance that it could be. Just go check out eBay listings, it's all there. But on the other side of things, it's probably people that like knew the scalpers were going to be there, and they're just trying to get stuff for themselves, like.
Yeah.
But I mean, this whole thing was just like, this was honestly almost painful to watch. Like, I mean,
Yeah, I
this is
believe it.
like 90s Black Friday levels of animosity. Like, this is ridiculous.
Definitely. I mean, it's not unsurprising to me, I'm gonna be honest. Just, I guess, at this day and age, the things people are willing to do just to try to get they want has kind of gotten a little crazy.
Yeah, and it is one of those things. Scalpers are always going to be there, especially with Pokemon cards. That's just kind of been a thing. Not that, obviously not that anyone thinks that that's okay, but it just is what it is. But I think like part of it also comes down to like the museum, and even this does also extend to the Pokemon Center, by the way. We'll get to that in a second. But like the, you know, the policies of the museum, from what I've heard, is that you don't get, it's not like a one card per purchase. It's like one card per item bought, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was probably not helping things. And then, yeah, like I said, this extended over to the Pokemon Center as well. You know, a lot of these products was made available online via the Pokemon Center. And all of it, nearly all of it was bought out, sold out before like Pokemon's official email notifications went out, before the new product page on the website was even updated. I mean, the assumption there, and there are a few people that have reported on this, the assumption there is that it was all like scripts and bots that managed to get in the moment like the website's code was updated. So just overall a really messy situation. Pokemon has responded. They publicly apologized about the drop, publicly stated that literally everything is sold out and that they are working on trying to get more product, more Pikachu with gray felt hat promos available. And then there's some cancellation on orders as well. That's all kind of a developing story right now. So we'll keep you updated on it as it comes along. But I don't know, man. I really don't understand how this happened. Like, Pokemon has, I mean, they've seen the whole scalping thing, the whole reselling thing. They had to have seen it at this point, right? It really hit like ahead in 2020, right, with the whole Logan Paul thing, and it becoming a big investing game because of that. And Pokemon has made efforts to make product more available, right? And we've seen that astronomically with the Scarlet and Violet expansions, right? I think every set release since base set Scarlet and Violet, there's been tons of product. Nothing really has ever been in risk of selling out, say for like the Pokemon Center 151 ETB. Pull rates are good. You know, the scalpers are not liking Scarlet and Violet for all that fun stuff. It's not like they haven't noticed this stuff. So, like, the fact that this went the way it did is, like, honestly kind of baffling to me.
Definitely. It definitely is. I mean, I think I could make a little room to say just they probably weren't quite expecting it to be like this.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like you said, obviously, with everything that has happened and with the scalpers already that we know have been dealing with and whatnot, with the steps they've already taken, like, that's for more official Pokemon product in the long run. I don't really think that they were considering that this, like, offshoot, like, cool, just collector card that's going to be a partner with the museum. It's just, like, a Pikachu. I'm sure they knew it was going to be, like, popular among their fans, but I don't think they quite realized how many people are going to be rushing out there or, like, trying to buy all that product online, you know?
Yeah, and I could definitely get behind that, to be honest, because honestly, like, it was kind of one of those things.
I wouldn't expect it, like, because at the end of the day, I can see just some Nintendo employee or whatever that's helping set this up, or not Pokemon employee that's helping set this up, and they're coordinating. Just not really considering the fact that this would be, like, insanely popular.
And that's a good point, actually, right? Because, even on my end, right? Like, you know, it was all coming around. I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then, like, you know, the video came out and everything went viral. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess, yeah. I guess that does make sense that this would happen, right? Like, it just was out of my mind until I saw it myself. So I could see where you're coming from with that. Yeah. And
I watched the short here. I definitely do not think anyone was expecting, like, the levels of people that was going on in this YouTube show.
Oh, yeah.
Not many people at once.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, absolute insanity. Like, you would, it would, I wouldn't have expected that, right? Like, the one thing with, like, the Pokemon Center and the website, like, okay, that you probably could have seen coming, but
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people mobbing over each other at the museum itself. It's just, wow. So don't be like that, please. The product or even your profit, even though obviously I don't personally agree with the whole scalping reselling thing, but even you guys, your profit is not worth trying to get hurt for that kind of stuff. So just don't be like that. But yeah, kind of an unfortunate story, but like I said, it's still kind of still kind of a breaking news or still kind of unfolding. So if anything else comes out about that, we will be here to talk about it in future episodes. But for the time being, we've got one last news story before we go over our one regional tournament for this week. And this news story actually came out today. I was quite shocked to see this as I was gathering our topics for our recording session today. About a week or so ago, we reported that, on a story that the Pokemon company in Japan was starting to really crack down on the sale of counterfeit cards, you know, fake cards, metal cards, stuff like that, right? And it just kind of seemed like that was just going to be like, okay, we're doing this, and then that would be the end of it. But you can imagine my shock when I pull up PokeBeach and I see an article titled "Japanese Police Arrest Suspect for Selling Counterfeit Pokemon Cards Online." I did not think that they were going to get this serious about it, but apparently they were.
It is a little surprising when you think about. This is definitely one of those things that you would hear about that they're doing, like you said, but you just would not, like, never actually expect them to go out of their way to, like, catch somebody doing it.
Yeah, I mean, stuff like that is usually, like, corporate talk, right? Like, oh, we're trying to protect our brand.
Yeah, like, it comes up and find you, we'll sue you, or something like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's absolutely wild to see this. And, you know, how it all happened is that, you know, there's this guy in Japan selling counterfeit Pokemon cards. One of his customers found out that they were fake and actually alerted the police themselves. And the police began an investigation. They asked Nintendo to appraise the cards, and Nintendo confirmed that the cards were counterfeit, which does violate the trademark. So they traced it back to this guy who openly admitted to selling the counterfeit cards. And it's like over 1,000, or like, yeah, when you convert like the cost, it's like over $1,000 here, which I don't know how all that works in Japan, but from what I know, at least in a lot of portions here in the States, if you do anything like this that equals over to $1,000, that like ends up being a felony. Again, I don't really know how that works in Japan. So it seems like that this is an investigation that Pokemon and Nintendo and all them are really trying to take seriously to really curb stomp stuff like this. Again, this is all in Japan. I don't believe TPCI has made any headway or any announcements on similar courses of action in the States or any other places international to Japan. So I don't know. It's kind of wild to see that. And we'll just leave that where it is, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good, honestly, it is a cool story to hear about. So.
Yep. Big Pikachu protecting their brand is what it is. And, you know, it's like we said when we have reported on this initially, right? Everybody's, you know, had to break it to a kid that they've got the fake Pokemon cards, right? And that, you know, that'll dash people's excitement for the game and stuff like that. And especially for, like, parents that probably don't know any better and stuff like that. So it's nice to see, or I can understand Pokemon's want to crack down on that stuff. And I mean, hey, it wasn't just corporate speech. They, you know, they're actually taking action on it. So, you know, just be on the lookout.
Definitely.
Well, for our final news story, we have one regional tournament to talk about. And I got to say, just before we like really crack down on this, it is weirdly nice. Like, the way they're doing regionals this season is that no regionals are falling on the same weekend outside of, you know, the few Australian regionals here and there. So, us covering, like, you know, multiple regionals, like 4, 5, 6 regionals a week or every 2 weeks is probably a thing of the past, right? Because... you know, at most we'll ever have to do like 2, maybe 3 if there's an Australian regional that weekend, right? So nice to kind of have our new segment cleaned up a little bit thanks to the new regional schedule.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we've got a cool one here for you. Our first LATAM regional, the Curitiba regionals. And man, what a turn of events. I don't think anybody would have expected that Charizard EX would be the most represented deck among Day 2 players, sitting at 30% of the Day 2 metagame. Insane. I personally would not have ever expected that.
That is a little surprising, yeah. Because I know from our earlier talks and whatnot about Charizard coming out, we both agreed that it was going to be good for sure. But I don't think either one of us really expected it to be that popular at all, besides just the fact that the popularity of being a Charizard in the first place, you know? A good Charizard particular. But besides that, I don't think either one of us quite expected this.
Yeah, no, not at all. Because, the general consensus in the community was is that Charizard was, around that tier 2 range, right? It was big, it had an insane ability, but, it lost, some kind of important matchups, it was weak to path, and then, all these other things. And, admittedly, you could boil that down to, the card just coming out, decklist not being refined, and stuff like that. But what we saw is that slowly, the deck kind of got figured out, just a little bit slowly. We saw the Charizard Arceus variants were the most popular at Pittsburgh. Those didn't do too hot. The Lost Zone Charizard variant managed to snag a top 4 placement at Barcelona, which took a lot of people by surprise, the same weekend as Pittsburgh in Yokohama. Charizard Gallade secured a top 8 spot, and, people definitely noticed but weren't, too over the moon for those two archetypes. But the top-level Brazilian players all got together. They said, hey, we've got a cracked Charizard list, and we're going to go crazy with it. And, 30% Day 2 meta share and 5 of the top 8 decks being Charizard. They really cracked the code, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty crazy, honestly.
Yeah, pretty insane. So let's go ahead and break down that top 8. 8th place, Pedro Pertusi playing Charizard. 7th place, Juan Andre Mejia playing Gardevoir. 6th place, Dalton Nacheta with Charizard Arceus. 5th place, Juliana Alves Marquez playing Arceus Umbreon. Haven't seen that in a while. 4th place, João Requena playing Charizard Arceus. 3rd place, Leonardo Walbrinch on Charizard. 2nd place, Francisco Osorio playing Giratina Lost Zone Box. And 1st place, William Azevedo taking it all home and earning his world's invite with Charizard EX. Charizard getting the big dub not too far long after its release. You'll have to see it.
Definitely.
So let's go ahead and break down this Charizard list. That's kind of the talk of the town for us right now. And it's kind of an interesting approach to Charizard. This is not I don't want to say this is unforeseen, right? We saw a few people experimenting with just a straight Charizard Pidgeot deck without Arceus and instead relying on Forest Sealstone and stuff like that, right? That kind of core has not been that stuff isn't new, but what really brings this all together, in all honesty, is the full playset of Arvin in the deck. So much so that the deck has been properly coined online as Arvin's Charizard, which is pretty cool. Arvin.
That's pretty sick. That'd be a cool alternate art, I'm not going to lie.
Oh, that would be so sick. And it's been such a long time since we've had a supporter in a deck's name, right? Mm-hmm. I think, I guess you could make an argument that there was Melanie's Urshifu in the Fusion Strike metagame. Not everybody really called it that, though. So, the last, universal one would be, Greens Dex from Sun and Moon, which I miss, by the way. Love me some Greens Exploration. But anyway, you got Arvin, a supporter card. Search your deck for a Pokemon tool card and an item card. Reveal them, and then shuffle your deck. And this kind of works together really well, right? You can get, early game, you get your Charmanders, you get your Pidgeys into play. You've got an Entei V, you've got a Luminion V. Both of those can hold the four seal stone, so what you can do is by turn two, you get Arvin. Arvin gets you rare candy for a seal stone. For a seal stone, you use the Star Alchemy to get your Charizard or your Pidgeot or whatever. You know, rare candy, evolve, and then boom, you're off to the races. You've got, you know, of course, like your Charmanders, your Pidgeys, right? They'll, you know, sometimes end up going down early in the game to put your opponent on an odd prize map. The Celebrations Mew for the same thing. Which is pretty important, right? Because if your opponent takes five prize cards, Charizard swings for 330 damage, which there's, like, no deck in the format that can handle that.
Definitely.
So, really cool deck. And, I mean, you know, it's got a lot of tricks in here. Again, the Luminion, the Radiant Charizard, Penny, Mawile, Lost City. I mean, there's just all kinds of little tricks and different approaches to different matchups in here. Super cool deck, super consistent. I've done a little bit of playtesting with it myself. And personally, I'm a big fan, right? I mean, you're searching your deck constantly with Arvin, with Forest Sealstone, Luminion, Pidgeot. You know me, I love me my search engine, so I'm a big fan.
Definitely.
And a lot of the Charizard lists in the top eight were exactly this. Or, you know, something relatively close. Again, we did see a few Charizard Arceus decks in the top eight, and those are about what you would expect. You know, the usual stuff that we've been seeing online, and, you know, from the players at Pittsburgh and stuff like that. Nothing too crazy. I gotta give a shout out to Francisco for getting second place with Giratina. Probably. I want to. Well, that's probably one of the best performances Giratina's probably ever had outside of like World's Top Four from like Michael Pramalot. I'm not gonna lie. I saw the top eight graphic. I saw five Charizards and one Giratina. I said, "Well, Giratina's winning." But unfortunately, fell a little bit short in the finals, which is kind of wild. But you know, I gotta give shout outs to Francisco anyway. Good stuff. Good run with the Giratina. And last deck that I think really deserves some highlighting here is Juliana's Arceus Umbreon. And it's kind of crazy, man. Arceus just doesn't really exist in this format. Like,
yeah, it is a little crazy because, it disappeared for a while. It kind of made its comeback, you know. If it settled in, it had its place. And then it just kind of vanished again. It's a little surprising.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it really makes sense when, at the end of the day, right? People finally realize that Giratina is a good deck. It's, like, one of the most popular, if not the most popular deck right now. Arceus has always struggled against Giratina. Gardevoir is still really good. Arceus struggles against Gardevoir. And now we're throwing Charizard into the mix, which Arceus also does not do particularly well into. And of course, like, I don't think we can ever really truly say that Arceus is bad just because of how versatile the card is, right? If you got a perfect hold on the metagame, like, you know what decks are going to be good for that specific weekend, you could probably make an Arceus deck strong enough to take advantage of the metagame, but even that's a little bit difficult because the metagame is just so wide open right now. Like, yeah. Between Giratina, Lost Zone, Charizard, Gardevoir, Chien Pao, Goodra, Muraidon, Rapid Strike, Lugia, both variants of Lugia, and like so many other decks, like, you know, it's hard to create an Arceus counter box, you know, to challenge a metagame. It's just too open. You're gonna fight some bad matchups along the way.
Definitely.
So kind of crazy that Arceus finds itself in this position, but that's why I want to give a shout out to Juliana here for the solid finish with Arceus Umbreon. Very funny to see the 1-1 Lucario here, as that is something that I had in my Arceus Umbreon deck at Milwaukee. Construction was a little bit different, but it was just kind of weird to see this and be like, wait, I did that. That's crazy. But it's the same usual shtick. You've got your Arceus line, 2-2 Umbreon, trading in a 1-1 Duraludon for a 1-1 Lucario. So you've got the Lucario V-Star, the Duraludon V-Max, the Hawlucha and Radiant Alakazam combo, Heavy Gust, Heavy Adventures Discovery, Heavy Lost City, just trying to take the right knockouts whenever you need them. I think I've made a note in the past. I'm a big fan of Arceus Duraludon Umbreon. I think it's actually a really fun deck. Just kind of weird considering that I spent, you know, 2 years like hating on Duraludon VMAX like hardcore. But yeah, I don't know. Cool deck. And, you know, Arceus Duraludon, man, it's one of those things. It's like one of those waves, man, you know. It's gonna dip down. You're gonna look at the format. You're gonna see Giratina, Charizard, Chien Pao. You're gonna be like, man, Duraludon sucks. And then when you start saying that, that's when the Lugia players start, you know, they start cutting their tech cards and they start showing up more. And then somebody rolls up with Arceus Duraludon, and the whole thing starts all over again. You gotta love it.
It's a beautiful cycle.
It is a beautiful cycle, and it's crazy that it happens with so many different things at so many different points in this game.
Definitely.
But be that as it may, that is going to do it for our news segment this go-around. Let us know what you think of today's news stories. A lot of big talking points this week, for sure. So hit us up. Let us know what you think. You can hit us up on Twitter at DamageCounter, DamageCounterPodcast@gmail.com if you prefer email. And of course, you can also hit us up in our community Discord as well. We'd love to keep the conversation going with y'all in there. But for the time being, we got a 60-card showcase to talk about. We're heading back to the Alola region. Well, I say back. We haven't covered a Sun and Moon deck yet. But we're heading over to the Alola region to cover a little bit of retro, right? We've been running out of some standard format decks. Paradox Rift is not due until November, and that will definitely shake up the format. So it's times like this where it is perfect for us to break down some retro. So let's get into it. I gotta be honest, I think I was counting the days for when we covered Sun and Moon Retro.
Uh-huh.
Because there was a good while there, as I was working on my retro project, trying to build, you know, a bunch of different retro decks for a bunch of different eras of the Pokemon trading card game. There was a while there where I just, like, belted out, like, 4 or 5 Sun and Moon Retro decks in the span of, like, a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, because Sun and Moon is still relatively, you know, new, quote-unquote, and it's still relatively cheap to build for. So I figured, like, well, if I'm building this many decks, I have more Sun and Moon decks than any other retro format at the moment. At some point, surely, like, it's only a matter of time till it ends up on the podcast in our 60-card showcase. And, yeah, sure enough, that's what we have here today. We're going to be talking about Blacephalon GX and Naginadal. Just an absolute powerhouse of a deck. I mean, I'm just saying, if you like Chien Pao in the standard format, this is the deck for you, for sure.
Definitely, it is a very cool deck.
Yeah, it's that's part of why I picked this one, right? Is that this is, you know, you and I have played through my Sun and Moon decks. We've played a good portion of them, and then after that play session, you and I were just like, man, that Blacephalon deck's really fun.
I mean, it really is. It's, I don't know. I mean, just the style of it, rotating it and bringing in the Blacephalon and doing the one-shot, it's just ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, just the amount of energy you can get into play to hit just some insane numbers is ridiculous. We should probably go over the Blacephalon GX, though. Blacephalon GX is a basic fire-type Pokemon. Has the attack Bursting Burn. For 1 fire energy, your opponent's active Pokemon is now burned and confused. And for 2 fire energy, you have the attack Mind Blown. It does 50 damage, or rather 50 times. Put any amount of fire energy attached to your Pokemon in the Lost Zone. This attack does 50 damage for each card you put in the Lost Zone in this way. So, like I said, very similar to standard format Chien Pao, except you're Lost Zoning the energy instead of discarding them. So, gotta be a little bit more careful. You are essentially on a ticking time clock if you're not efficient with your energy. But, yeah, that's the name of the game. You get a bunch of energy into play, and you try to take a one-shot as often as possible. And we've got a lot of really fun ways to get an absurd amount of energy onto the field. Like, it's actually ridiculous.
Definitely. It's a lot of fun to play, like we were saying earlier. I mean, these big, like, big shot, just do big damage decks. They always have some glaring weaknesses, but man, are they fun. Just...
Oh, yeah, well, because who doesn't like to go big swing every now and again?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an absolute blast to pull that off. And, you know, when you have, like, those really good turns where you're just drawing super hot with the deck, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you could confuse it with the X and Y format with how long the turns can take sometimes.
100%.
Because it's like, you know, you Ultra Conversion, draw 3, Heat Factory, draw 3, Welder, draw 3, Dedenne, discard, draw 6. Like, search my deck for this, search my deck for that, Ultra Conversion again, charging up. I mean, so many actions that, like, you could take in a turn. Like, it gets absurd sometimes, and it's really funny.
Definitely.
But yeah, a lot of those abilities and cards that I just mentioned are how you're getting your fire energy into play. Primarily, the one prizer Naginadel from Lost Thunder, with the ability charging up once during your turn before your attack, you may attach a basic energy card from your discard pile to this Pokemon. And of course, if you have multiple Naginadel on the field, you can do that multiple times. You know, charging up to this one, charging up to this one, charging up to this one. Boom. You got 3 energy in play right there. You got your attach for turn. You're already swinging for 200 damage, right? So, but you've also got Welder, one of the most infamous supporter cards I think probably ever printed. Attach up to 2 fire energy cards from your hand to one of your Pokemon. If you do, draw 3 cards. That's some pretty insane ramp. And even more insane, you have the Beast Ring, basically Sun and Moon's equivalent to our Mirage Gate. You can only play this card if your opponent has exactly 3 or 4 prize cards remaining. Search your deck for up to 2 basic energy cards and attach them to one of your Ultra Beasts, then shuffle your deck. So between all of those actions, you can get an absurd amount of energy into play. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It really is ridiculous. It's one of actually, I think even still to this day, that's one of the better, like, energy acceleration and decks I've ever played. I'm going to be honest. It's definitely up there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's probably... Yeah, no, I honestly, outside of, like, Rain Dance decks, you know, like Chen Pao. you know, outside of decks like that, I mean, yeah, this is probably, like, the craziest the game has probably ever had with energy acceleration. Because again, you know, like I said, you have the charging up abilities. Welder gets you 2 on a supporter and draws you card. And you could realistically play 4 Beast Ring in one turn and just accelerate 8 energy from your deck. That is a real thing that can happen.
Definitely.
And yeah, I mean, the rest of the deck is just consistency from there. We've got the Naginadel GX as well to combo alongside the one prize Naginadel. With its Ultra Conversion ability, once during your turn, before your attack, you may discard an Ultra Beast card from your hand, and if you do, draw 3. Once again, goes well with the Welder, also a draw 3. Goes well with Heat Factory Prism Star. Once during each player's turn, that player may discard a Fire Energy card from their hand. If they do, then draw 3 cards. So a whole lot of draw 3 happening here.
Marshadow's, the unsung MVP of this deck, I'm gonna be honest.
Oh my god, when I was so playing insane. It with you,
yeah, Marshadow came in so handy so many times.
Right, yeah, because you gotta realize that this is still a format where you can play a supporter on turn one, right? So if you go first, right, you know you get your Blacephalon, you get a bunch of your basics, you can Welder to something, draw some cards. If you got the Heat Factor, you know, you do that, draw some cards. You get all set up and everything. You're like, all right, boom, cool, I'm ready to go next turn. You go search your deck, use that Mysterious Treasure, go search your deck for Marshadow, drop that on the bench with its Let Loose ability. When you play this Pokemon from your hand onto your bench during your turn, you may have each player shuffle their hand into their deck and draw 4 cards. So you get to do all of that on your first turn and then end your turn with a Let Loose. And your opponent starts the game with a 4-card hand, draw for turn, makes 5. And they've not even had a chance to play any cards yet. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. It's disgusting.
honestly, it's a pretty toxic card. I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, it's good for a reason, right? I mean, this card was quite panned by the community back when this was in standard. And for good reason, right? But, I mean, hey, it's part of the format. You got to play around it. And it's definitely possible to do that. But, you know, outside of that, you got a few other just general consistency things. Dedenne GX, Dede Change, discard your hand, draw six. Tapu Lele GX, Wonder Tag, when you bench it, you search your deck for supporter. I can get you Cynthia, shuffle, draw six. Guzma, kind of Sun and Moon's primo supporter, Gust, where both players have to switch their active Pokemon, and kind of stuff like that. Another neat thing about the deck is the Beast Energy Prism Star.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at first glance, you wouldn't actually be able to tell, because usually cards with this effect look very different, but you know, it has the effect, while this card is attached to an Ultra Beast, it provides every type of energy, but provides only one energy at a time. The attack to the Ultra Beast this card is attached to do 30 more damage to your opponent's active Pokemon. So this can help you be a little bit more energy efficient. If you're going up against, let's say, a Blacephalon Mirror, for example, you can use Mind Blown and only lost Zone 3 energy, mm-hmm. which will be 150 plus the 30 buff from Beast Energy hits you at a 180, which allows you to get the one shot, allows you to be a little bit more efficient with your energy in a lot of situations. But again, it's also effectively a rainbow energy, which again, just at a glance, you probably couldn't tell because again, like the artwork is usually very different to indicate that. But
yeah,
that means you could realistically attach it to the Naginadal GX and use its Venom Shot attack. Discard two energy from this Pokemon. This attack does 170 damage to one of your opponent's Pokemon. So just to be able to belt a snipe play out of nowhere using this. I've let my friends borrow this deck, and there have been games where it's just literally been, okay, attach Beast Energy Prism Star, next turn, attach Fire, Welder, Venom Shot. Okay, mm-hmm. that sets me back. Let me play the game some more. And they go, Welder, Venom Shot. And I'm just like, stop.
Stop.
It's brutal. So you definitely want to be on the lookout for that. But I mean, yeah, dude. What were you saying? Like, a bunch of energy acceleration. Probably the most crazy energy acceleration a game has ever seen. Just, I mean, the combo of all combo decks.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very, very fun deck to play, that's for sure. Without a doubt.
Yeah, so if you're into aggressive combo decks, maybe give this one a look. Alternatively, there is also a one-prizer Blacephalon deck that kind of does the same thing, but instead discards energy from your hand instead of lost zoning energy from your field. And is a one-prizer, so a lot of people consider that one to be better for, you know, obvious reasons. So if, you know, if this kind of playstyle interests you, maybe look into Blacephalon GX Naginadal or the one-prizer Blacephalon, both very strong decks, very fast, very aggressive, do a ton of damage. If that's your kind of, you know, if that's your kind of style, like those wombo combo, do a buttload of damage, check it out. It's a pretty good list. And of course, you know, you can check out the list for yourself. Links to all that will be in the episode description. And yeah, I mean, that's Blacephalon GX for our 60-card showcase. Probably not, like, back when I envisioned, like, oh, one of these days we're going to talk about Sun and Moon, you know, on the 60-card showcase. I probably would not have guessed that this would be the first one, but, you know, because I'm not the kind of guy that gravitates towards these, like, wombo combo aggressive decks. Usually not the kind of decks that I play, but usually when I'm playing Sun and Moon, I'm looking at the deck box that says Burst GX on it, and I'm like, man, that's a fun deck. Maybe I'll play it. So let us know what you think. Hit us up on Twitter at Damage Counter Podcast, or at Damage Counter, damagecounterpodcast@gmail.com if you prefer email. Hit us up, let us know. And of course, you can also let us know what you think on our community Discord as well. Links to that are in the episode description.
And as always, if you have a deck you'd like for us to talk about here on the podcast, feel free to send it our way. We'd love to talk about it. I think we've established well by now we don't care about the format. We just want to talk about a cool and interesting Pokemon deck. So, you know, send them our way.
Send them our way, indeed. We love to play all the formats. So definitely hit us up. But in the meantime, we got a brand new set that had just released, Josh. A very unique set. One that I am very much a fan of in many different ways. Pokemon card 151, or I guess I should say Scarlet Violet 151 here in the United States, has just recently been released. A commemorative set focusing on the original 151. A lot of cool cards in this set that I'm, you know, been pretty excited to try both competitively and for fun. And of course, all that great artwork and stuff like that. So we're here to break down our top five cards from Pokemon card 151. So Josh, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Now I gotta say, I know I said it a little bit in the build-up to the segment, but I gotta say, this is probably one of the most unique and probably one of my favorite set releases of all time in the Pokemon trading card game. Not exactly the most impactful set as far as the competitive metagame goes, but full of a lot of really fun cards, a lot of unique cards, and it's kind of breaking some conventions in ways, right? Like, you know, when new sets come out, they're all ordered by, like, type, right? All the grass types are at the front, followed by the fire types, followed by the water types. So, and that's just how the sets are organized, right? But yeah. This set being a commemoration of the original 151, it's in order of the Pokedex, which is just so cool to me. I absolutely love that.
That definitely is pretty sweet.
Yep, and of course, you know, the original 151, absolute classics. You know, I very much do not have a deep love for the Kanto region, but I do have a deep love for its Pokemon. You know, I mean, all of these designs, all 151 of them, mean a lot to a lot of people. And I think you and I are no exceptions to that. So I thought it would be fun for us to count down our personal top fives for the Pokemon card 151 set. Of course, this is our own individual lists, right? So we can base it off of different things, artwork, playability, just however we're feeling, just to shout out our top five cards for whatever reason. And there's a lot of reasons to like these cards. So Josh, why don't you kick us off? What's your number five?
Yeah, so kicking it off, my number five is purely an artwork pick, is the alternate art for the Giovanni's Charisma. Just full art where it's Giovanni sitting on a couch, like holding a Pokeball, like a wine glass, basically.
Oh, yeah, that's with a good
Persian,
one.
Yeah, with Persian cuddled up and like the Pokemon collection in the background. I don't know, I just really like that artwork.
Oh, man, I didn't even notice. Yeah, the background. Yeah, element. Yeah, wow.
That's the part that I really like, is like the glass cases with the Pokeballs and obviously the Master Ball sitting on the shelf. Like, I don't know, it's just cool. I like the vibe it's given.
Dude, yeah, super neat card. I always look forward to like when Giovanni gets cards, because Giovanni is like, well, let's not beat around the bush here. That man's a Yakuza boss, and he's one of the coolest characters in Pokemon. Like, he's not, obviously, he's not a very deep character, but he's just really cool.
But he is the original suave villain. You know, Pokemon's have a lot of different kinds of leader villains these days, but Giovanni's still up there as one of the best for sure.
Yeah, that's why I always look forward to when we get new Giovanni cards, because the full arts, or just the artwork, like even on the base card, like the artworks just always go so hard, and it's just like, man, that dude is going to kill me.
yeah
oh, no, definitely. I'm a big fan. That's a good one. So we'll move right along here into my number five then. And my number five might be a weird pick to some, but to those that know their Pokemon TCG trivia, I'll probably fully understand why this would be on my list. And that's going to be Kadabra. Good old plain Kadabra. Now, we covered it a little bit on previous episodes, but, you know, Kadabra is unique in this set, as this is the first Kadabra card printed in, like, 22 years. Yeah, there was that whole lawsuit going on with Uri Geller. He thought that Kadabra was being made in his likeness and prohibited the Pokemon company from printing any cards with Kadabra on it. And so we haven't seen him since, I want to say, Skyridge, which was back before Generation 3 even. So it's been a long time since Kadabra's showed his face in the card game. And it's really cool to see him back, you know? Just a neat little thing. He's not a particularly great card by any means. You are more than likely going to be using Rare Candy to skip over him entirely because he's not particularly great. But, you know, it's just cool that he's back. And that's all I really have to say about it.
Definitely, I have to agree. It's, I mean, it's just cool to see, you know, something that, a card that has, like you said, has been made 22 years, it's finally back into the game. And the whole story was actually pretty touching. If you didn't watch that episode of our podcast, you should definitely go back and listen to that segment, because the whole kind of journey that the guy that originally got the card pulled in the first place had is pretty touching, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was like a really good feel-good story at the end of the day. Uri Geller realizing that, like, hey, there's a lot of Pokemon fans that love this guy, and I made a mistake here, and he even wrote his own words and a letter to the community, a letter to the Pokemon company, all that fun stuff. So a real feels good story. Again, you can check out our episode on that. I don't know which episode that is specifically, but you can go check through the episode descriptions. I leave links to stuff all over the place. you'll find it if you read the episode descriptions, I'm sure.
Definitely.
Let's keep things moving along here, Josh. What's your number four?
I think my number four would have to be Mew EX.
Mew EX. I would have expected this one to be a little bit higher, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, it is and it isn't. It's a cool card, and I like it. It's definitely going to be good. But at the same time, I don't know. I'm just a little sick of Mew, I'm going to be honest for you.
You know what? That's fair. That is 100% fair. I'll give you that.
We've been seeing a lot of Mew for a long time, but I mean, no, I think Mew X is a pretty cool looking card. I guess just to go over it real quick, it's Mew EX with the ability to restart. Once during your turn, you may draw cards until you have three cards in your hand. I mean, that's always just a nice ability. Have that down on the bench, you know, set down to one or zero, get back up to three for free. That never can be a bad ability if it lets you draw cards for the most part. Yeah. I mean, but the real shine here is the attack with Genome Hacking. For three colorless energy, choose one of your opponent's active Pokemon's attack and use it as this attack. I mean, that's just, it's pretty funny.
Dude, it's a really fun attack to use. I've been experimenting with Mew EX a little bit, and, like, you know, just to like, boss up a Radiant Greninja, be like, yeah, now I'm going to use Moonlight Shuriken, or now I'm going to use Lost Impact, or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's pretty awesome to use your opponent's tools against them sometimes, and I'm a big fan of it myself.
Definitely.
So we'll move into my number three here, or no, my number four. I'm skipping all over the place here. We'll move into my number four. My number four is going to be that Wigglytuff EX.
Oh, I respect it.
I love this card. It makes me a little upset that it's not, like, super great right now, but it definitely has potential later on. Wigglytuff EX, a Stage 1 colorless EX Pokemon with 250 HP, has the ability Expanding Body. If this Pokemon has any special energy attached to it, it gets plus 100 HP. And for 3 colorless energy, Friend Tackle, 90 damage, plus 90 if you played a supporter from your hand during this turn. Of course, the big build around there is that ability, right? You attach a special energy to it, and now, boom, you've got 350 HP. Which is big, right? I mean, like, we talked earlier about how difficult it is to knock out a 330 HP Charizard EX. Now you got a 350 HP Stage 1 Pokemon.
Pretty crazy.
It goes even further, right? Because, like, in, you know, 151, we also got the Rigid Ban. The Stage 1 Pokemon this card is attached to takes 30 less damage from your opponent's attacks, effectively making it a 380 HP Pokemon. Now, granted, your damage is a bit middling, only at 180 or 160 if you use a double turbo energy, but even still, not terrible numbers. And if you're going to have that much HP anyway, you're probably going to be surviving a few hits, you know, outside of things like Star Requiem and stuff like that, of course. But yeah, super fun card. And I'm it's a card I'm definitely keeping my eyes on. Because the moment this card becomes good, I'm probably going to be playing it because it looks like fun.
Definitely. That looks pretty cool. I guess moving on here to my number three pick. This might be a little surprising for you, but for me, my number three pick was Jinx EX.
Oh, really?
Just because, I'm not going to lie, just building a deck around it seems like it could actually be pretty fun. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, obviously, yeah, absolutely. It's not
gonna, you probably can't make something insanely viable with this, but the sweep KO's in it against is a little funny to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, there's always something fun about those decks that's just like, you know, you meet this oddly specific condition and you just get an insta-KO.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, dude, it's great. And, you know, with Jinx EX's Heart-Stopping Kiss, if your opponent's active Pokemon is asleep, it is knocked out for water and two colorless. I mean, come on, how are you not going to try that? Even if you don't think it's good, how are you not going to try that? That sounds like so much fun.
Definitely.
Yeah, combos really well with the Hypno in the set, which when you evolve a Drowsy into Hypno, you put your opponent's active Pokemon to sleep. Yeah, no, it definitely seems really fun. It's a deck that I've actually been wanting to build, like on BTCG Live or something, just, you know, just to try out and have some fun. And actually, you know what? I might do that sooner rather than later because Peoria is going to be my last regional for a while. So I'll probably do that when I get back from Peoria. That sounds like fun.
Definitely.
But yeah, that's what I absolutely love about Scarlet Violet 151 is that there's just like so many fun cards in this deck, including my number three, my starter of choice, Venusaur EX. Gotta talk about some Venusaur, man. That's my favorite Gen 1 starter. Venusaur EX, a Stage 2 Grass-type Pokemon with 340 HP. He's big. He's got the ability Tranquil Flower. Once during your turn, if this Pokemon is in the active spot, you may heal 60 damage from one of your Pokemon. And for two grass and a colorless, the attack Dangerous Toxwhip for 150 damage. And your opponent's active Pokemon is now confused and poisoned. So outside of the fact that Venusaur EX is my favorite starter from Gen 1, or Venusaur, I love tanky Pokemon, and I love healing, right? So I could just imagine a deck where you get, like, a bunch of Venusaur into play. You don't even need to have the energy to attack if you don't want to, right? Like, you could go either way about it. You just get a bunch of Venusaur into play, play a bunch of switch cards, like, at the Lost Zone, and just, like, okay, heal 60, switch, heal 60, switch, heal 60. Like, just start racking up the healing. Say, hey, I'm back to full health, and I've also got 340 HP. What are you going to do about it?
Definitely. It's pretty crazy, honestly. I mean,
it's a lot to set up for sure. Which is why it's not like particularly great by any means. But like I said, that's my boy. I gotta at least play it, right? And you know, it's just another one of those decks that's like, yeah, that looks fun. I wanna do that.
I have to agree with you. I mean, you gotta love Venusaur. He's the boy, you know.
He's the boy. He's that he's the dude. Boy.
Look, you just look at him. You just want to squish him. All right. My number two pick here. Another classic one for me is one of the other starters. I got Blastoise EX.
I had a feeling that he was going to appear somewhere on the top five.
Yeah, my two and one are pretty basic, I'm not going to lie. if that tells you what my number one is.
I think I can predict it, but we'll get there when we get there.
You have to understand. Anyway, Blastoise EX is pretty cool. It's got the ability Solid Shell, so this Pokemon takes 30 less damage from attacks. Can't go wrong with that. A little built-in damage resistance with 330 HP already. That's just
dude.
I mean, this is a tanky boy. He is the tanky boy. And for 2 water energy, you get the attack's twin cannons. Discard up to 2 basic water energy cards from your hand. This attack does 140 damage for each card you discard this way. So, I mean, 2 energy for a potential 280 damage. Granted, you have to have 2 more energy in your hand, but that is not hard to do with water in the first place, or get it back to do it again. So, I mean, that's pretty respectable.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember when this card got revealed, everybody read it. There was like, what? This thing does what?
I mean, you gotta think, 330 HP with the built-in 30 damage resistance, and this thing is doing 280 for 2 water energy a turn. Like, if you have to deal with this, when you're gonna be sitting there, it's good. You're not gonna be able to OTK this thing. That's pretty crazy.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it's just like one of those things, like the Blastoise gets set up, and you're just like, oh boy, okay, this just got a whole lot harder. and it's been making some waves. People have been playing it. I think probably, you know, if you were to try to look at, like, you know, all the quote unquote archetypes that have come from 151, Blastoise is definitely the best of them, I think. Blastoise, I mean, dude, it's big. It does a lot of damage. You still have Irida in the format, which just makes it that much more consistent. It's pretty good. I'm actually pretty excited to see if anybody has a deep run with it at Peoria Regionals, because it's definitely there's definitely a possibility that that happens.
Yeah, I'd be excited to see that too.
Yeah, we will absolutely have to wait and see on that. We'll move into my number 2 here. I'm gonna cheat a little bit. I'm going to talk about Vaporeon, Jolteon, and Flareon as my number 2, the Eeveelutions. Mostly because they all have the same attack, basically. Fighting Whirlpool, Fighting Lightning, and Fighting Blaze for a Water and 2 colorless, Lightning 2 colorless, and Fire 2 colorless, respectively. If your opponent's active Pokemon is a Pokemon EX or Pokemon V, this attack does 90 more damage, 90 plus 90, 180. Pretty solid, right? There's a lot of EXs in the format, there's a lot of Pokemon V in the format. You attach a reversal energy to Vaporeon, Jolteon, or Flareon, and you get a 180. You know, you can hit water weakness on things like Entei V. You can hit the lightning weakness on like a Lugia or on a Pidgeot or on Palkia. Flareon, I don't think is really hitting anything for weakness right now, but, you know, we're going to throw it in there anyway because we love Flareon. I'm a big fan of this, to be honest, and I was genuinely like trying to theorycraft like a Zoroark Eeveelution deck to try to take advantage of these 3 as well as a few of the ones that are already printed, like the Glaceon and the Leafeon from Astral Radiance and stuff like that. Try to like make this Zoroark Eeveelution weakness box. Unfortunately, wasn't quite where I needed it to be on a competitive side, but it is definitely a thing that you can do, and I will keep my eyes on this, on that potential idea, because I would love to experiment with an Eeveelution box.
Definitely, I mean, I can respect that. I think that's a respectable choice.
You can't ever go wrong with some Eeveelutions, right?
No, I almost did it myself, I'm not going to lie to you. I thought about it.
I mean, one of us was going to do it, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, it's part of why I didn't, because there was a part of me that figured that you already had it covered.
Yeah. I remember telling myself, like, many years ago, I was like, man, I'm not going to be the Eeveelution guy, that's so basic, and then I became the Eeveelution guy. I love them too much, they're too good.
Hey, man. It is what it is. And talk about basic picks. My number 1 pick is Charizard EX.
Yo, the big Charizard EX. Hey, man, respect, honestly. Respect.
I mean, it is basic, but I always have been a Charizard fanboy like many others. It's just, it is what it is. I used to get upset about it, but now it's like, whatever, I love Charizard. It is what it is, you know?
Yeah, I've had that kind of come to Arceus moment with Charizard myself recently. just playing so much Charizard EX from Obsidian Flames, I'm like, you know, I hate all the Charizard pandering, but this Pokemon is really cool. This is a really cool Pokemon.
Definitely. And I mean, with the attack, Brave Wing for 1 fire energy, if this Pokemon has any damage counters on it, this attack does 100 more damage. 160 for 1 energy. I mean, just a little bit of damage, that's not a bad requirement. That's pretty sick. And I mean, for 4 energy, being able to do 330, that's pretty crazy.
Oh yeah, leave it to Charizard to have an instant nuke button.
I mean, granted, you have to discard 3 energy to do it, but still, I mean, 330, that is an instant nuke at pretty much anything base in the game right now.
Yeah, there's not much that's going to be able to handle that. I mean, you know, we already said it before. Dark Charizard can hit those numbers. And, yeah, people don't like it when Dark Charizard hits those numbers. So imagine not having to fumble around with prize cards to get there.
Definitely.
Yeah, pretty big. No, I can't fault you for it. Charizard's pretty cool. And that's definitely a really cool card. And that's another card that I'm excited to see if anybody does anything with. I don't think that it's probably going to see like any kind of crazy success in comparison to a few cards in this set, but it definitely has the potential to do so. And, you know, we'll just go ahead and move into my number one. Not too much to talk about here because we already talked about it. I got Mew EX at the top.
Yep, I figured.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it's just like, that's the obvious pick because it is the most competitively viable card in the set. But I just had to, man.
It is a very cool card. It's very competitively viable for one. But besides that, it's a cool card that I think is actually going to be kind of crazy to see what people do with. It's also going to be interesting to see how people deal with it just because, I mean, you know, it's kind of scary seeing that thing on the board. And if you don't get to swing on your turn and you get take a KO and you have out, like, say, your Charizard EX, you're like, oh my god. You know?
Yeah, or if it's like one of those decks, and that's part of like why Colorless Lugia has just been on a hot streak lately in online tournaments, because Colorless Lugia powers it up easily thanks to Archaeops. But it also has the ability to just, like, hold it in hand until they need it, and then just go, okay, bench, Primal attach. Turbo, attach Gen yeah. Energy, move into active, and there goes your Giratina. Bye-bye. Yeah, so, it's a super versatile card, and you know I love me my versatile cards.
Oh, definitely.
Cards that can go in anything have a soft spot in my heart, and I mean, yeah, it's just super cool, and I've already seen a bunch of people do a lot of crazy stuff with it. I've played it in some decks, and I'm excited to do crazy stuff with it at some point. I mean, yeah, it just had to be Mew EX for me.
I can respect it.
Yep, but that is going to do it for our top five cards from Pokemon 151, or our own respective top five lists. Let us know what your favorite cards are. Pokemon 151 is an awesome set. There were a few cards on here that I was like really trying to find room to talk about. Hey, you know what? We'll do that real quick. Two or three honorable mentions. Do you have any?
Let me think. You go ahead. Go first.
So I've got a few because there were a few that I wanted to talk about that, you know, I got to make the cutoff at five, right? So I wanted to talk about the Venomoth. The Venomoth is really funny. For 1 grass energy, you deal 30 damage, and your opponent cannot play item cards from their hand during the next turn, and their active Pokemon is also confused. Tricky Jim put out a video playing Venomoth alongside Spidops EX. So you item lock your opponent, confuse them, and increase their retreat cost with Spidops, making it basically impossible for your opponent to do much of anything. And it's surprisingly more effective than you might think it is. So that's a really cool card. And then there is also the Starmie with its Mysterious Comet ability. Once during your turn, you may put 2 damage counters on 1 of your opponent's Pokemon. If you place any damage counters in this way, discard this Pokemon and all cards attached. Really fun card. Can help with some numbers here and there. Could definitely be useful in some decks. Of course, there's the Alakazam EX that can attack from the bench. The beautiful Illustrator Rare Dragonair. That card is amazing. And then you got the little Ditto. The artwork is great, the ability is cool, and the attack is called Splup.
Splup.
Splup. I love it. Splup. It's so good.
That's pretty cool.
You have any honorable mentions of your own?
I definitely looked at like the Sparrow Fero as a mention, just because long a little complicated to pull off because one, it involves going second in the first place and being able to get the Sparrow and the Fero online at the same time. That the idea of it's pretty funny to me, because being able to get like your Fero turn to one basically ended off with a break catch and just search your deck for three cards is pretty strong if you can get that to pull it off.
Yeah, no, I was taking a look at that too. I think it's a really cool concept, because it's just like, you know, going second kind of sucks sometimes, right?
Definitely.
But, you know, being able to turn going second into search your deck for three cards, it's pretty good. I feel like if it had more HP and wasn't as susceptible to something like Lost Mine or Spit Innocently or even Radiant Greninja, I feel like if it was a little bulkier, I think more people would be talking about it. But yeah, I mean, you can't ever look at cards with evolutionary advantage and search your deck for three cards all in the same package. You can't ever look at that and ever count that out. I'm sure there's some control variant that will do exactly that at some point after a few rotations. So it's definitely worth keeping your eye on for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Well, I think that's going to cover it for our top five cards from Pokemon 151. Let us know what your favorite cards are from the set. You can hit us up on Twitter at DamageCounter, DamageCounterPodcast@gmail.com if you prefer email. And of course, you can keep the conversation going with us on our community Discord as well. We'd love to keep the conversation going with y'all, talk about your favorite cards, maybe build some decks together. Definitely check us out. All the links to all those things are in the episode description. And yeah, I think that's going to do it. That's episode 40-something. I already forgot. In the bag.
In the bag.
I want to thank everybody for watching as always. And once again, appreciate the uptick in 5-star reviews. Trust me, I see you. I notice you. I appreciate it. So thanks to everyone for doing that. And yeah, you can find me on Twitter at EmerDCP. That's E-M-E-R. DCP is in Damage Counter Podcast.
And you can find me at smiling_anarchy.
And of course, don't forget to follow the podcast itself, Damage Counter Podcast on Twitter.com, Damage Counter Podcast on YouTube.com. We're going to be having some YouTube content rolling out now that I'm got a little bit more free time to my name these days. So going to be working on some of that. But with that being said, I think that's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.